for an editorial review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit my webpage. It's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on eminent domain and takings cases when we come back. You know, over the past century, we Americans who were once independent, capable, and able to manage our own financial, medical, and legal affairs have now been reduced to dependence, incompetence, incapacity. We've been made wards of powerful commercial, financial, medical, and legal corporations, cartels, and bureaucratic institutions of our modern industrial society. And we've been taught to rely upon these paid professionals like bankers to manage our financial affairs and doctors, to manage and treat our health problems and lawyers, to direct our business and legal affairs, instead of relying upon our own good common sense. That's why I contend that it's time that we Americans who were once able to catch our own fish learn once again how to fish instead of being fed by our paid professionals. Regaining our power of attorney is the single most important step in regaining our capacity, rights, liberties, and duties. Now, if you'd like to learn more about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you write for my free general law CD package? Remember, it's educational, informative, entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can order yours by simply calling the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to the website, send me an email. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto that email machine, send an email request. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about takings cases. Last time we were talking about this thing of pleadings. Pleadings, the most important element in a trial. That trial procedure starts at the scene of the crime. It proceeds through arraignment, bail setting, trial, jury deliberations, appeal, two or three appeals, and all kinds of legal wrangling that goes on. But the single most important event that transpires is called the pleadings. That's where you walk in and the judge asks you this question: how do you plead, guilty or not guilty? The judge is a salesman. He's selling you a product. He's selling you the red death pill or the green death pill. He knows that. You don't. The minute you plead not guilty or guilty, he doesn't care which, from that point on you can't win, as evidenced by the fact that 94% of the time you lose. And so when I say you can't win, you can win 6% of the time, but 6% out of, you're going to lose 94 and win 6, you know, for practical purposes, it isn't worth playing the game. So Henry Lamb, who is the president of the Environmental Conservation Organization. So let me tell you what the Environmental Conservation Organization is. They publish a paper called The Ecologic Powerhouse. Ecologic Powerhouse is a monthly magazine, news magazine, on these kinds of ecological problems, primarily aimed at ranchers and ranching and farms and farming and logging and loggers and private property from a conservative viewpoint. If you'd like to get a little more information about the Ecologic Powerhouse, let's see what their name and number is here. Flip over here to the back. The Ecologic Powerhouse, 1200 North White Sands Boulevard, Suite 110, Alamogordo, New Mexico, 88310. Again, that's the Ecologic Powerhouse, 1200 North White Sands Boulevard, Suite 110, Alamogordo, New Mexico, 88310. I imagine you could probably get onto their webpage somewhere if I can find it. I don't see it on here, just looking at the paper. Here, once in a while, I do a review of the Ecologic Powerhouse. This is number 28, April 2005. Merritt R. Lamb is the editor. Their Their email is freedom@freedom.org. Here it is, www.eco.freedom.org/EL/. Again, that's www.eco.freedom.org/EL/. That's their webpage. Their email is freedom@freedom.org. It's an easy one, freedom@freedom.org, the ecologic powerhouse. Well, anyway, Henry Lamb wrote a treatise, and it was picked up by WorldNet Daily. It was just published here at 4:30, and what he's talking about here, the subject matter he brought up, was a fellow down in Florida who got nailed for cruelty to animals, when in reality the government was in there with a panther that had a radio control or a radio collar on this panther. The panther comes in, jumps into his petting zoo, and is eating his goats and his emus and his chickens. And then the government comes in and charges this guy with cruelty to animals. Henry Lamb picked up on that, and he says that isn't right. Well, I agree with Mr. Lamb that isn't right. But unfortunately, it's the way the game is played, and if you want to play in this game, then you got to play by the rules. And Mr. Sheely and Mr. Jacobson here aren't playing by the rules, or they don't know how the game is played, and then they're complaining about it. For instance, let's suppose we go into Harris in Reno, and we walk up to the crap table, and they say, gee, I want to play these dice, what do I do? And they explain the rules to you, and they don't explain to you what the odds are. It is true, when you throw those dice down there, if you've got your money on the right place on the table, when the number comes up, you win. If it isn't on the right place on the table, then you lose. And the chances of you winning, the odds are you're going to lose. The house is always going to win. That's the way the courts are set up. The courts are set up so that when you come in here and play this game, by the rules, you're going to lose 94% of the time. Now, if you want to come in here and win this game, you're going to have to play the game a little differently than the average Joe Sixpack. That's why I opened this school many years ago, 21 years ago now. I got into the same kind of problems that Mr. Lamb is describing here. I was running a small manufacturing company out in Boise, Idaho, and I had OSHA and the EPA and the State Tax Commission. I had them coming in here charging me with all kinds of crimes and writing me tickets, and the OSHA guy was writing me tickets, and I'd come in and I'd argue these cases and I'd lose. And I couldn't figure out why. You know, I put on my underarm deodorant and I did all those things that people are supposed to do. Well, I decided that I would start studying law, so I picked up with an old Mormon lawyer. Yep, an old Mormon lawyer. And old Ben took me out to the, went out to his office a couple of times, but typically when we would have a session, we would go over to the Pizza Hut in Cuna, Idaho, and Ben would sit there and expound to me certain principles of law, like I've been doing in the last two or three programs. I'm just passing on to you what I learned from old Judge Becker and old Judge Schmidt and old Ben Rice. And I found out that when I went into court and I played this game by these kind of rules, the rules the way they're set down, I could win. I could win about 84% of the time. Actually, I'm up to about 90%. Now, I can win about 9 cases out of 10. I can't win them all, but I can get 90%. Now, the government wins statistically 94 and they lose 6. I can win about 90 and lose 10. Not quite as good as the government. Almost, not quite. I'm about 4 percentage points behind them. And I can teach you how to do the same thing. So I'm going to tell you a story. So gather around, boys and girls, and let me tell you a little story here. There's a clause in our Constitution at Article 1, Section 9, and it says, no state shall compel any vessel to enter, clear, or pay duties in a port of entry. I looked at that and I thought, well, that must apply to trucks, and no state can compel a vessel, a truck, to enter, clear, or pay duties in a port of entry, and that's what those scales are alongside the highway. And I was kind of green as a gourd and a novice at this, and I didn't know too much about the law, but I said, I think I want to test that. And I'm ready to go to jail to do that. So I got to running my truck. I had a truck and trailer, and we were hauling furniture, and I ran a furniture company. And so I'm driving my truck loaded with furniture one night, and it's about 7 o'clock at night in summertime up in Idaho. And we got down to the bliss scale, and I just blew the bliss scale like it wasn't there. I just right on by. And I was expecting the highway patrol to come out and give me a ticket and arrest me and confiscate my truck, and we'd be on with a constitutional confrontation from here to Washington, D.C., and my name would be written like Miranda versus Arizona. It would be the famous Gordon versus Idaho case. Nothing happened. I went out and delivered my furniture and came back home and made my report, and I said, well, I ran the scale and they didn't do anything. So we mused about that a little bit and said, well, maybe they didn't see you. You know, maybe the guy in the scale shack, maybe he was busy and he just drove by at the moment when he was looking the other way and he didn't see you. So you better try it again. So next Friday night, I hit the road again and got down to the bliss scale, and I went right on by. This time I was looking inside, and the guy was looking through the big plate glass window, and he looked right at me. Shucks, we were practically making eye contact, you know, except it was a couple hundred feet over there. And he watched, and I could see his head turn and move as my truck went on by. So surely he saw me now. I mean, he just looked right at me as I drove right on by. I figured, well, surely now the highway patrol will be out here with red lights flashing, and nothing happened. I went out and delivered my furniture and went on back, and we got to musing about it, and, well, gee, I wonder why they didn't come out. Well, they must know about Article 1, Section 9. And then we got to think, how in the hell would a crummy highway patrolman know anything about constitutional law in Article 1, Section 9? I said, they're just too damn lazy to come out there and run us down and give us a ticket. Just laziness. So I said, well, what we got to do here is we got to stimulate some interest. So the next week on Friday night, we loaded the truck and we're driving down the road, and I got down to the bliss scale. So this time, to make sure that they could see me and make sure that there wasn't any mistakes, I lugged the truck down to about 20, 25 miles an hour, and I went by the scale. And as I went by the scale, I gave the guy the finger so that he could see. George Gordon giving him the finger as I drove by at 20 or 25 miles an hour. Now, let me assure you, now that'll get the highway patrol's attention. They had two cop cars before I got to the next milepost. I mean, they were on me like flies on stink. Well, Officer Mogenden, he came up there. He's a pretty nice old guy. You know, he was kind of toward the end of his 30-year tenure. And then he said, son, how come you didn't stop back there at the scale? And I preached him a sermon. Boy, I told him about the Constitution and Article 1, Section 9. And, boy, I gave him a civics lesson like he'd never heard before. Like he'd give a rat's rectum about the Constitution or about a civics lesson on the side of the highway. So he said, well, son, you're under arrest. And he arrested me, and he hauled me off to the Gooding County Jail, and they hauled me in and gave me a ticket and booked me through the process, and I posted bail and they released me, and I went back and got in my truck and went about and delivered my furniture. Now we suffered a damage. We have been arrested. We've been jailed. And our constitutional rights at Article 1, Section 9 have been violated. Now we've got a constitutional issue. Now we can take this issue to the Supreme Court of the United States and get my name written up in the law books like Miranda versus Arizona. So we started off with what's known in Idaho, at least in those days, was with a preliminary hearing. I called for a preliminary hearing and I got one. And then I came in and I argued that no crime had been committed, that I had a constitutional right. Constitutional right at Article 1, Section 9. And then during the hearing, the judge asked me some questions. And I produced the witnesses, evidence, and testimony to the effect that I had this constitutional right and blah, 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 blah. And so the judge, he paused for a moment and he said, "Now, Mr. Gordon," as I was testifying, he said, Mr. Gordon, I'm a little confused here. He said, "Is this truck that you were driving, is this truck registered here in the state of Idaho?" I said, yes, sir. Registered, licensed, bonded, insured, and everything, all the good stuff that goes along with it. He said, "Okay, go ahead and tell me some more." So I went ahead and I told him some more, and pretty soon the judge couldn't contain himself anymore. His name was Becker, Judge Becker. And he said, "Son," he said, "now let me ask you another question. Is this truck, this registered, licensed truck, registered and licensed in the state of Idaho, does this truck engage in any interstate commerce? Does it go across state lines like into Utah or into Wyoming or Oregon or anything like that?" "Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We have customers all over the western United States. Why, we've got customers in Wyoming and Utah and all over." And he said, "Well, thank you. And he said, "You go ahead and tell me some more." And so I went ahead and testified, and I told him some more. And we're sitting here arguing about law. Has a crime been committed? Or do I have a right to drive my truck out there on a public right-of-way? And he said, now this truck, is this truck owned by you, or is it owned by Atlantis Manufacturing Company?" And, "Oh, no, this is Atlantis Manufacturing Company, and it's a corporate truck." And pretty soon the judge stopped me again. He says, "Is this truck, this corporation, chartered in the state of Idaho?" Yeah. "Chartered in the state of Idaho, and the truck's owned by the corporation, and it's licensed, bonded, and insured." And pretty soon the judge stopped me again. He says, "Excuse me, son, but let me ask you another question. Does this truck engage in any interstate commerce? Intrastate commerce. Commerce within the state of Idaho." "Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. We have customers all over the state of Idaho." Well, we get to the end of this, and pretty soon prosecution puts in their 2 cents worth, and we got all through with the hearing. The judge said, "You know, ordinarily, I would take this under advisement, and I would issue an opinion in about 21 days. But," he said, "in this case, that won't be necessary. It won't be necessary at all." So there were some motions that were heard that day, and so he said, "No, on this motion over here, that's granted, and that motion over here, that's denied." And he went through those 10 or 15 motions, and he took care of that. And he said, "Now, Mr. Gordon," he said, "now, when we go to trial," and he said, we are going to trial. He said, "Now, when we go to trial, if you mention the word Constitution in front of the jury..." Now, I demanded a jury trial, just like this fellow Jacobson did that we've been looking at here for the last 2 or 3 days, demanded a jury trial. And after all, that's my constitutional right to demand a jury trial. And I came in here and I pled not guilty. Now, I was charged with a violation of Idaho Code, Chapter 49, Section 2927. Failure to stop, enter, clear, and pay duties in the port of entry. Now, that's what they charged me with. Failure to stop, enter, clear, and pay duties in the port of entry. And the judge says, "If you mention the word Constitution in front of the jury, I'm going to hold you in contempt of court every time I hear the word Constitution come out of your mouth. I'm going to sentence you to 5 days in jail every time I hear the word Constitution come out of your mouth." You hear that, boys and girls? Now, when I left that court, I could hardly contain myself. When I got back to the office, I said, "That dirty commie pinko fag judge, why, he despises our Constitution," and I was just rabid, beside myself. Why, every gastric juice in my body was flowing at double the normal rate. Later on, after I learned a little something about the law and the judge explained to me how the game is being played, I understood that the judge is the only guy there that knew which end was up. And that's just where reality was. I didn't know. I thought I did, but I didn't know which end was up. And the prosecutor, he's dumber than I was. I'm totally ignorant, and the prosecutor's just plain stupid. He's, of course, he's been to law school. That's his excuse. I didn't have that excuse. I hadn't been to law school, so I hadn't been handicapped, but I didn't know very much either. So the case goes to trial. Now the state came in there, and they produced Officer Mogenden and his backup man, and they got on the witness stand, and they testified that George Gordon was operating a truck on the night of June 13th, 1978, and that on that night that he ran the Bliss scale and he did not stop in or clear and pay duties, clear violation of Idaho Code 49-29-27, and therefore he was guilty as hell. Throw him in jail. And so when the government got through producing the Waymaster, who testified that I gave him the finger on the way by, and Officer Mogenden and his sidekick and everybody there, and of course now we'd gotten through, and the jury is sitting here listening to this whole case, you know, and the jury's listening to the case, and pretty soon the prosecutor ended its case, and they arrested about 5 minutes to 12. Now that's the magic hour. Whenever you're in trial, you want to remember that if you've got the floor, you watch the clock. And then at about 5 minutes to 12, you look up at the judge and you say, "Now, Judge, should we pause here so we can take our noon break, or would you like me to proceed?" And the judge will say, "Well, how much more time is it going to take you to finish with this witness, or how much time is it going to take you to do this, that, or another thing?" And that's so that you don't interfere with lunch, because in the judicial process, one of the most important places in the process is the noon break, which is right at 12 o'clock. Don't you run overtime. It's kind of like schools and recesses, you know. You have to have recess and you have to have lunch break. So the judge said, when I got up, the prosecution rested 5 minutes too, so I stood up and I moved to dismiss for failure of the state to prove its prima facie case, and the judge was very interested in that, and he looked right at me and he said, "Now, what was it, Mr. Gordon, that the state failed to prove in their prima facie case that you're asking me to dismiss on?" And I didn't know. I just knew that this was the prima facie break time, and that was my move. Ben taught me that over at the Cuna Pizza Hut, and I moved to dismiss for failure of the state to prove its prima facie case. And when the judge said, "Well, what was it that they failed to prove?" I didn't know. I just babbled. Well, the judge looked at me and he says, "Well, I do, but I won't. That is, I know what they failed to prove, but I'm not going to dismiss because you can't identify it. So therefore, let's take our lunch break and we'll come back at 1:30. And you can put on your half of the case, Mr. Gordon." So at 1:30, I still hadn't been found in contempt, so I hadn't mentioned the word Constitution in front of the jury yet, and I had it. So I went out and I ate lunch, and boy, I really felt bad because the judge told me the answer. He said, now I know what they failed to prove, but I'm not going to tell you. And the burden is on me to tell the judge. So if you don't know the answer to this riddle, if you don't know the answer, the judge isn't going to tell you. Now, if you thought that this was Catholic Church and that the good priest in there is going to make all these bad people go away and make everything right, you got another guess coming. This judge works for the state. This judge is working for the prosecuting attorney in the state of Idaho. He gets paid every Friday, you know, by the guy that's complaining about your behavior. Now, if you could identify the prima facie failure, he would dismiss, because the rules require it. But if you can't identify it, he doesn't have to tell you what it is. And he's not going to. And he didn't. Now, you know, when 1:30 comes back and court reconvenes, the bailiff stands up and he says, hear ye, the Honorable Judge Becker presiding, you know, all rise. And the judge comes in, you know, up at the front, you know, not this day. No, this afternoon, the judge, instead of coming in through the side door up in the front, he came in through the back of the courtroom. Back of the courtroom. And he caught the bailiff kind of by surprise. And when the bailiff saw him coming in from the back of the courtroom, he didn't know whether he was supposed to say, hear ye, or not. He kind of stood there with his mouth open, and the judge walked right up to the defense table, stopped right beside me, put his hand on my shoulder. He leaned down, looked me right in the eyeballs, and he said to me, "God, I wish I had this case. I would win it in 5 minutes." And he walked on up and he sat down, looked at me, and he said, "Now, Mr. Gordon, are you ready to proceed with your half of the case?" Well, now that made me feel just real good, knowing that the judge, number one, knows the reason why the state's case failed, and then number two, says I could win this case in 5 minutes. I didn't have a clue as to how to win this case. So I went on for about another 3 or 4 hours that afternoon. Well, it started at 1:30, finished at 4:30. For 3 hours, and I presented witnesses, evidence, and testimony, and ranted and raved, and jumped up and down, pawed the ground, bit the bushes, and did all those things that incompetent pro se litigants believe they need to do to win a case in court. The judge was very patient, heck of a nice guy. And he put up with all of this nonsense all afternoon, and finally at 4:30 I rested my case, and the judge charged the jury, and the jury went out, and while we were sitting in the courtroom and waiting for the jury's verdict, the judge's clerk came in, and she didn't have much to say, but she said to me, "The judge is available," and she turned around and walked out. Now, she said 4 words, "The judge is available." And I looked over at my friend, Steve Gibson, and I said, "What does that mean, Steve?" And he said, "I don't know." Well, since I'm an old-timey salesman, I said, "Well, let's go find out." So Steve and I went on into the clerk's office and said, "You said the judge is available." And she said, "Right this way, sir." And she led me back, and me and Steve, we went back through the labyrinth, you know, through this. It's kind of like a maze, a rat's maze, as you go back to the judge's chambers. And we walked into the judge's office, called judge's chambers, and the judge has got this real nice high back chair, and he's got these nice chairs that sit in here, you know, for lawyers to sit in the judge's chambers and talk to him. And so she invited us to sit down, and we sat down. Pretty soon, Judge Becker, he comes wheeling in, and he ripped off his cape, you know, his robe. He ripped off his cape like Batman, you know, and he hung it on his tree, and he whipped out his pipe. He was a pipe smoker, and he whipped out his pipe, and he sat down. He looks across the desk. He looks me right in the eyeballs, and he says, "God, I thought you had him. God, I thought you had him this afternoon. I really thought you had him. But you let him get away." So he leaned back in his chair, and he stuffed his pipe full of Mixture 79, and he lit up. You know how these pipe smokers are, and there's clouds, billowing clouds of smoke going up in the air. And everybody in the room, they're just me and Steve and the judge, and we're all sitting there kind of uneasy, not knowing quite what to say. And so the judge looked over at me and he said, "Well, how do you think the jury will come back?" As he's lighting his pipe and puffing and billowing clouds of smoke are coming up. And I said, "Well, I don't know, Judge. How do you think they'll come back?" And the judge leaned forward in his chair, took his pipe out of his mouth, blew out a big cloud of smoke, and he says, "Oh, they'll come back guilty, all right." And I said, well, why do you think they'll come back guilty?" And the judge, he's sitting here blowing great billowing clouds of smoke up into the air, puff, puff, puff. And he said, "Because I told them to." Now you get that, boys and girls? The judge says, "Ah, they'll come back guilty, all right." "Why, Judge?" "Well, because I told them to." And I missed that part of the trial. I missed the part where the judge said, "Now, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, when you come back, you make sure you got a guilty verdict here for Mr. Gordon." I missed that part. I don't know where I was. I was there in the courtroom. Maybe I was in a fog. I don't know. So I said to the judge, "When did you tell him to come back guilty?" And he said, "With jury instruction number one." Jury instruction number one. It says, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, if you find that the defendant George Gordon failed to stop, enter, clear, and pay duties in the port of entry, you must find him guilty as a matter of law. That was jury instruction number one. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, if you find that the defendant George Gordon failed to stop, enter, clear, and pay duty in the port of entry, you must find him guilty as a matter of law. Jury instruction number two, he said, also set the stage. It said, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, if you find that the defendant George Gordon did stop, enter, clear, and pay duty in the port of entry, you must find him not guilty as a matter of law. Now, the government came in and testified that George Gordon did not stop, enter, clear, and pay duty at the port of entry. George Gordon came in and testified that he did not stop, enter, clear, and pay duty at the port of entry. He had another agenda. Remember Article 1, Section 9 of the Constitution? So everybody was in agreement. The government came in and testified that Gordon didn't stop, enter, clear, and pay duty at the port of entry. Gordon was in agreement. He said he didn't stop, enter, clear, and pay duty at the port of entry. Let me ask you, boys and girls, what in the hell did we need a jury trial for? Why did we need a jury trial to decide whether or not George Gordon stopped, entered, cleared, and paid duty in the port of entry when everybody was in agreement that he didn't? It ever occurred to you that maybe there are times when you don't want a jury trial? You know what the judge said to me? He said, now, Mr. Gordon, you demanded a jury trial, remember? And now you got a bunch of farmers and mechanics and housewives out there trying to decide whether or not you're guilty or innocent. And we all know you're guilty as hell. You didn't stop, enter, clear, and pay duty at the port of entry. And he stopped his smoking. He looked across the desk and he said, hell, man, that's not the issue we wanted to decide today. We wanted to decide whether or not you were required to stop at the scale. The issue, boys and girls, is, am I required to stop at the scale? We don't want to decide, did he or did he not stop at the scale? But, of course, with a jury trial, the only issue that can be decided is the factual issue. Did he or didn't? Not, should he or shouldn't he? All right, with that much out of the way, we're at the halfway point. Now hang on while I give you a caveat, and we'll tell you. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School. And The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law Hour and The Law School, please go to the website. Website, georgegordon.org. It's easy, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. This law school is open to individuals, but by prearrangement only. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website. That's georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Remember, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the Law School direct, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967 for your free general law CD package. If you want to order that direct over the Internet, you can do that too. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send an email request. One last item here. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember the website georgegordon.org or call the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. 4967. All right, we're talking about Judge Becker. Judge Becker. Now, Judge Becker confided in me. He said, you know, this statute has a flaw in it. Statute 492927 has a flaw in it. And I've been in front of the Judiciary Committee. I've been in front of the Supreme Court. I've told everybody that has an ear that this statute needs to be corrected. It's got a major fatal flaw in it. And he said, the first guy that can walk in here and argue that flaw correctly, I'm going to cut him loose. And he says, you're not that guy. Well, naturally, I was pretty concerned and I'm pretty curious to know, well, what is it about that statute? And I said, well, I came in here to argue Article 1, Section 9 of the Constitution. The judge, in surprised horror, looked up, looked me right in the eyeball and said, Gordon, that is a bullshit issue. I mean, the judge just looked me right in the eyeball and said, that's BS. Now, for you patriots out there, you know, that get all excited and your gastric juices are jumping up and down, you know, and your hormones are throbbing and you want to argue the Constitution. Why would you want to argue the Constitution in a admiralty court? And isn't the traffic court an admiralty court with a fringed flag? Huh? And, you know, you talk about admiralty and maritime law. That truck, you know, is a vessel operating in interstate commerce, used in traffic, steering around islands and backing up to docks and loading and unloading in commerce. I mean, there isn't anything connected with the common law involved in this entire enterprise. It comes under the Commerce Clause at Article 1, Section 8. Commerce, Article 1, Section 8. Government, Congress, has the power to regulate commerce. And, you know, you talk about jumping into the lion's den. So the judge said to me, he said, did you code plead that statute before you came in here to trial? And I said, code plead? He looked at me again in horror and he said, what? What? You didn't code plead the statute? Code plead? Hell, I'd never even heard the word. How could I code plead the statute? What does that mean? Now the judge could see that he had a willing, excited, a participant that wants to participate, but's too damn dumb. So the judge said, well, let me show you how to do that. And said, take out a piece of paper and write this down. So boys and girls, get your pen and paper out. Now the judge had a whiteboard right behind his desk. So he got up to conduct school. Now, I'm in the judge's chambers, and the judge now is going to explain to me Idaho Code 492927 and how to code plead it. So if you want to listen, you want to learn, get your pen and paper out and follow along. And you start off with Idaho Code 492927. Write it down. Idaho Code 492927. Now, here's what the statute says, and we're going to write the statute out. It's a very simple statute. It says four words, all trucks loaded with. Can you write that down, boys and girls? Sharpen your pencil now on both ends so you don't run out of lead. All trucks loaded with, colon. Can you write those four words down? All trucks loaded with, and then a colon. All right, now if you get that written down, after the colon, this statute has a list of items that trucks normally haul. You know, things like lumber and furniture and raw materials and hay and manufactured goods and products. And there was a list of 40 items on the list. You don't have to write all 40 of them down. Just put down 1, 2, 9, 11, 27, 36, and 40. And just put in here, you know, things like lumber and steel and manufactured goods and raw materials and hay and... Then the last sentence, after that list of 40 items, says, shall, stop, enter, clear, and pay duty in a port of entry, period. Now that's the statute. all trucks loaded with, it lists the 40 items, shall stop, clear, enter, and pay duty in a port of entry. Shall stop, enter, clear, and pay duty in a port of entry, period. Legal question arises. Who's required to stop at the scale? Judge looked at me. He said, who's required to stop at the scale? And I mulled that over, and I thought about it, and I thought about it, and I go, I don't know. And the judge said, empty trucks! Empty trucks! Don't have to stop, enter, clear, and pay duties at the port of entry. It doesn't say all trucks shall stop at the port of entry. It says all trucks loaded with. And there's a list. Now, if your truck is loaded, but it's loaded with something that's not on the list, it doesn't have to stop at the scale. And he gave me an example. He said a truck loaded with nuclear waste doesn't have to stop at the scale. It's not on the list. And I was sitting there and I said, oh, I didn't know that. Woo, wow, I didn't know that. So if my truck was loaded with nuclear waste, I wouldn't have to stop at the scale. That's right, son. And if my truck was empty, I wouldn't have to stop at the scale because it says all trucks loaded. Loaded. Loaded with. Can you read, boy? Well, I have to admit, I couldn't read. You see, I've been to the public schools. I not only couldn't read, I couldn't count until I was 37. Now, the judge just gave me a reading lesson. He said, now, the intent of the lawmaker is the law. If the legislature had intended for empty trucks to stop at the scale, they would have said so. They would have said, all trucks loaded or empty shall. They didn't say that. They said, all trucks loaded with. So if it's loaded with something that's not on the list, you don't have to stop. If the truck isn't loaded, you don't have to stop. Now, of course, the Highway Patrol, they can't read either, so they believe that every truck has to stop, enter, clear, and pay duties in the port of entry. And they require it. And they come out and give you a ticket if you don't. And they came out and gave me a ticket because I didn't stop at the scale. Now, he said, you asked me. You said, I moved to dismiss for failure of the state to prove its prima facie case. What did the state fail to prove? And I asked you that, Mr. Gordon. I said, what did the state fail to prove? And you couldn't tell me. And he said, they failed to prove that your truck was loaded. They produced no witnesses, no evidence, no testimony that your truck was loaded with anything. Or if it was loaded, was it loaded with something that was on the list? They failed to prove that. And had you said, they failed to prove my truck was loaded, I would have dismissed for failure of the state to prove its prima facie case. But you could not tell me what it was that they failed to prove. And I'm not here to give you legal instruction, Mr. Gordon, not in open court. Now, he said, I've been working on this statute for 15 years. Well, 14 years, he said. And in 14 years, nobody has ever paid any attention. He said, now, if anybody can walk in here and argue this thing correctly, I'll cut them loose. Now, that's the second time he told me that. I think what he was trying to tell me is, Gordon, why don't you go back to your office, clean up your act, and go try this again. Only this time, let's see if you can get it right. So I said, thank you, thank you, thank you, Judge Becker. And then we went back in because the jury now was ready for their verdict, and they came in and found me guilty. Guilty. Guilty of what? Guilty of failing to stop, enter, clear, and pay duties in the port of entry. Which, after all, I admitted to. I said I didn't stop, enter, clear, and pay duties in the port of entry. And that's what they charged me with. That was the issue. The issue wasn't Article 1, Section 9. The issue wasn't some constitutional grab bag. The issue was a statutory construction of the statute. All right. Now, I went on to win that case later because Judge Becker had denied me counsel. You know, my Steve Gibson, my counsel, was denied me, and so when I raised that issue on appeal, the Idaho Supreme Court reversed my conviction on appeal. So I won the case, but I won the case on a collateral matter. Now we're ready. Now we know the answer to the riddle. So we took the truck in, and we looked at it, and the truck had some holes in it. You know, you could get underneath it and look up through the floorboards, and you could see through the holes that the truck was loaded or empty, and there were rivets that were missing in the side of it, and there was a gasket, you know, that had a piece of the gasket was ripped out. You could look right through the back doors and see that the truck was loaded or empty. So we fixed all that. We nailed tin cans down over the holes in the floorboards, and we put a new gasket on the back door, and we siliconed in all the rivet holes, and we built a battlement up on the top and stretched a tarp across the top of it, and we got down to the bottom of King's Hill, and I had a chase car behind me. I had Rick Hossvite and two witnesses in the chase car, and then I had he had a Polaroid land camera. This is in the days now before we had video cameras. And we set out from Boise with an empty truck. Truck is empty. Got to the bottom of King's Hill, and I let the air out of the tires so that the biggest thing that we could see here you got an empty truck, you know, and the overload springs aren't touching the blocks. Now, anybody could just look at that and see that there's nothing in this truck. The truck isn't loaded. And, of course, that wouldn't help us at all. We need to get arrested. We need to get jailed. This is a sting operation. We've got to create a damage over here. We got to convince the highway patrol here that this truck is loaded. So I let the air out of the tires so that the tires are kind of flat on the bottom, you know. And then I'm driving this empty truck up the hill. It's kind of uphill. I got it in fifth over at about 25 miles an hour, and it's kind of lugging along like chug, 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 you know, as we're going by. And just the week before, I'd been convicted now, you know, of running this scale over here. So, you know, the highway patrol is flying high. I mean, they just laid me away the week before. And here comes old Gordon again, you know, luddle, up the hill. And of course, I don't stop at the scale, and I go right on by. Hell, Mogenden was out here before I got to the next milepost. He stopped me, and we went through the drill again. And he said, "Now, Mr. Gordon, I want you to get behind me, and I want you to follow me back. We're going to weigh your truck." So I had one highway patrolman behind me and one highway patrolman in front of me, and we went down to the Bliss overhead, and we crossed over and went down the other side of the freeway, and then we crossed back over the freeway and at the bottom of King's Hill, and then we came back up the hill again, and Mogenden was leading the parade, and he drove off the freeway into the scale, and as he drives across the scale, I whipped around behind the scale shack, parked the truck, jumped out, took the key, and threw it out into the weeds. Mogenden was just livid. He runs out there, and he says, "You're under arrest." And he takes me inside, and he called Judge Becker on the phone. They called for backup. They had five or six cop cars there. They had cops looking all over out in the weeds to see what I threw out in the weeds. They said, "What did you throw out in the weeds?" And I said, "I ain't talking. I don't have a lawyer, and I don't want to talk to you guys without my lawyer. Remember I told you? Keep your mouth shut. Don't say anything. And then shut up. All of the evidence that's ever going to be used against you is going to be furnished by you." Well, they got Judge Becker on the telephone. You know, this is a small county, Gooding County, and I think he's probably the only judge, or was at that time the only judge in the county. And they got him on the telephone. I couldn't hear the other side of it, but Mogenden was trying to get the judge to get him a search warrant because they just knew that truck had to be loaded with marijuana, cocaine, heroin, terrorist offensive weapons of some kind. And of course, this is in the era before terrorism, so they were looking for drugs or something. And judge said, "Well, what's your probable cause and what's the particular area that you want to search?" And they had cops, they were crawling underneath the truck, and they were crawling on top of the truck, and they were all around the truck, and they were all over the truck. But the truck had a padlock on the back door. And the key to the padlock in the back door was riding with the plant superintendent who was in the chase car, who was with the Polaroid land camera, who's taking pictures of all of this. You know, like Mr. Sheely over here taking pictures of the government's panther eating one of his goats. You need witnesses, evidence, and testimony, boys and girls, and I'm collecting it. Well, they didn't want to step out and lie. I thought they would lie and say that there was drugs or something in the truck, but they didn't. So they didn't get a search warrant. Judge said, if you want a search warrant, just swear on the affidavit as to what you're looking for. Commit yourselves, and I'll be happy to give you the warrant. They didn't want to take the bait, and they didn't. So we didn't get them to lie on the affidavit. Oftentimes, you can get the police to lie. Then you can really nail them, get them under the Civil Rights Act. All right, so they arrested me, and they booked me through, and they did all these good things, and then we went to trial again. Now, this time, remember, we're in a preliminary hearing, so we go into the preliminary hearing. Remember, the last time we were arguing Article 1, Section 9. This time, we're arguing, is the truck loaded or empty? So I developed 25 questions, and since it was my motion hearing, it was a motion to dismiss for failure of the state to prove its prima facie case. Remember, my duty is to prove that they can't prove the truck was loaded. Now, I don't want to give away the answer to the riddle. So I put Mogenden on the stand. I asked him some questions. I said, now, was Gordon drunk? No. Was Gordon cooperative? Yes. Is the truck licensed? Yeah. Did Gordon have a license? You bet. What did you stop him for? What was your probable cause? He failed to stop at the scale. Is that a violation of Title 49, Section 2927? Yes. So you charged him with failure to stop, enter, clear, and pay duties at the port of entry? Yes. Was there any other probable cause? No. And I said, what was the truck loaded with? And he said, that was question 18, and he said, I don't know. I said, was the truck loaded? He said, I don't know. I changed the subject. And then I said, is the truck owned by the Atlantis Manufacturing Company? Yes, it is. And is Gordon a licensed driver? And yes, he is. And we went on to some other questions, got to number 25 and left. I did the same to the backup man and the scale master. And I said to the judge, I move to dismiss for failure of the state to prove its prima facie case. The judge looks over at the prosecution and says, have you got any witnesses, evidence, and testimony? And the prosecution says, not anything that you haven't already heard. And the judge said, well, when we go to trial, are you going to produce any witnesses, evidence, or testimony, scientific information, or evidence that is going to add anything to this case? And the prosecutor said, no. And he said, Gordon, are you going to bring in any other witnesses, evidence, or testimony, pictures, or any other scientific evidence? And I said, yeah, I've got more evidence than this. But I said, I don't think I need it. I think that the government's already told you the answer to the riddle. And I moved to dismiss for failure of the state to prove its prima facie case. And, you know, the judge said, case dismissed. He got up and he walked out. Now, that courtroom was the little courtroom down in Gooding, Idaho. Holds about 30 people. About 20 of them were highway patrolmen and cops and government agents, and about 10 of them were my guys. And that courtroom was packed. It was standing room only, and you could have heard a pin drop. When Becker walked out of the courtroom, you would have thought everybody in there. I looked around, and everybody was thunderstruck, asking themselves, how much did Gordon pay that judge to dismiss? I didn't pay the judge to dismiss. The judge had already told me the answer. Prosecutor already said. Mogenden and all three of them. I asked him question 18. I said, what was the truck loaded with? I don't know. Was the truck loaded? I don't know. What's the government's burden? The government's prima facie case has to show the truck was loaded and that it was loaded with one of those 40 items on the list in the statute. State already said, we don't know. Won my case. Now what we've got here is a takings case with the Sheelys. Takings. And they allowed the government to come in here and pull a rin voyai, turn the tables on them, and to charge them with and to get them off here on a rabbit trail called cruelty to animals. And so here's Sheely and Jacobson coming in here arguing cruelty to animals. What we want to be arguing about is a taking of my property without just compensation. That was my mistake. I'm in here trying to argue Article 1, Section 9. The judge says that's a BS issue. You're not going anywhere with that. Except to jail. The real issue here is, was that truck loaded or empty? Now let's stay on point, boys and girls. Did you file your Argentine tax return? Do we want to argue about did I or did I not file my Argentine tax return, or do we want to come in here and argue about whether or not I have any duty to file an Argentine tax return? Now, in every case, it divides into two areas. The two areas are, is it factual or is it legal? The government comes in with a minor premise. Remember that minor premise. And they say, this guy didn't stop, enter, clear, or pay duties at the port of entry. I came in with the major premise. The major premise is, does the law require me to stop, enter, clear, and pay duties at the port of entry? If I plead not guilty, I reduce the controversy to a simple clear-cut issue of fact. Did he or did he not stop at the scale? When you come in and you plead non-assumption by way of confession and avoidance, when you come in and you say, I want a preliminary hearing, before I enter a plea, I want to come in and show you, Judge, that there has been no crime committed. When I came in and showed that the government doesn't know if the truck is loaded or empty, no crime has been committed. If the truck is empty, there's been no crime. Empty trucks don't have to stop at the scale. If there has been a taking, then you can't have cruelty to animals. You're gathering evidence. Gathering evidence is legal. Cruelty to animals isn't. Staking an animal out to have a panther attack it is cruelty to animals unless you've got a legal basis, a legal reason for doing it. Hey, these guys didn't do their homework. What's worse is they had a lawyer. Remember the story? The lawyer came in and argued their case. The lawyer came in and told the jury all those reasons why. Remember that? In the posh resort town of Naples, Florida, a six-member jury listened to Jacobson's attorney explain how none of Jacob's actions were in violation of any law. Yeah, it's not against the law to stake the animal out. It's not against the law to put a spotlight on him. It's not against the law to photograph him, but it sure as hell against the law to conspire to do these things if you know or you believe that a wild animal is going to come and attack that goat. And so they allowed the government to come in here and snooker him by charging him with a crime that's off point and out of context. Now, I said I was going to tell you about Wayne Hage. Now, next time we'll take a look at Wayne Hage and Storm Over Rangelands. Now, with this little background behind us, we'll be in a better position to take a look at here's what they did to Wayne Hage, and here's the way Hage beat him at their own game in a takings case before the U.S. Court of Federal Claims. That's next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. All right, you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Time's up. I gotta go. See you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.